Freier Verkehr. Der AEB-Podcast von und für die AlltagsheldInnen des Global Trade Managements.
So it's a very major shift for anyone involved in heavy industry, anyone involved in trade and customs for industrial manufactured goods. And it's also a big step forward, I would argue, for climate legislation. The biggest difficulty at the moment that companies face, that importers face, is that they cannot get data from the supply chain. And that's what we're here to help with. We're still burning a great deal of coal and emitting a huge amount of CO2 to make everyday goods. That can change. And the CBAM is an attempt to reorientate global markets towards making those kinds of investments in future technologies. I work in the climate space, and the past couple of months have not been the most optimistic. Let's put it like that. Mm-hmm. But CBAM does give me optimism.
Freier Verkehr. Heute mit Tabea und Jens.
Hi Tabea, wie läuft's bei dir?
Jens, I think you're mistaken. We're not having the episode in German today. We need to switch to English.
Yeah, you're right. I remember we've got our first international guest today. So yeah, English is the choice.
And we're really happy to have our first international episode in English today. So we can also reach out to all the non-German listeners today who could join our podcast today and listen to us.
Yeah, and we've got a really international topic as well. We talk about carbon border adjustment mechanisms, or CBAM, and this affects the whole EU. So I think it's worth to switch to English anyway.
And our guest today is going to be Gabriel Rosenberg, who is the CEO of CBAMBOO. And I would say let's jump straight in and hear about what Gabriel does.
Let's go.
The perfect recipe for a podcast guest on Freier Verkehr? How about a pinch of journalism, a dash of politics, a good dose of entrepreneurial spirit, and a huge splash of climate awareness? One person who checks all these boxes? Gabriel Rosenberg. The current CEO of the startup CBAMBOO began his career as a reporter at The Times, where he specialized in economic and tax-related topics. For his work, he was awarded Young Financial Journalist of the Year in 2007. He later moved into the financial sector and spent 14 years in various investment positions at hedge funds. Alongside this, he served as a councillor in a London borough and chaired the Liberal Democrat Parliamentary Group. In response to the EU's new climate law, Gabriel and his partner identified an innovative business idea and founded CBAMBOO in 2023, which uses software to help companies meet the requirements of the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism. We are thrilled to welcome our first international guest today. Gabriel, welcome to Freier Verkehr.
Hi, Gabriel.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. Yeah, Gabriel, it's about your startup, CBAMBOO, and it already carries the topic of today's episode in its name, CBAM, so CBAMBOO. So it's all about the carbon border adjustment mechanism. Can you please explain to our listeners what is CBAM and why is it such an important topic?
Certainly. Well, Jens, Tabea, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be doing this, and I'm sorry I can't be doing it in German, but I hope my English will suffice for your listeners. So CBAM is a very unusual new kind of regulation. It is a kind of combination between a trade law and a carbon law, a climate law. Its intent is to reduce emissions, but the way in which it does that is transmitted through the international customs system that many of your listeners will be very familiar with. What is going on with the CBAM is a kind of completion of a very important climate law, which is the European Union's emission trading scheme, or sometimes referred to as a cap and trade scheme. It is arguably the most successful climate law out there. It's an attempt to price carbon dioxide emissions. So the emissions trading scheme, the ETS, requires EU-based producers of industrial products to pay a per carbon dioxide ton price for their emissions. And the amount that they pay varies. It depends on a traded marketable instrument, the EUA. Now, the problem with that is that the European companies are at a competitive disadvantage to non-European companies that don't have to pay this carbon price. And so for many years, there's been a process whereby European companies have what are called free allowances, which offset their carbon payment requirement. And that slightly undermines the whole purpose of the ETS. And the EU has a plan to get to net zero by 2050, and it needs to find another way to level the playing field. So that's where the CBAM comes in. It's about leveling the playing field between domestic producers and international producers. If an international producer of a product like steel or aluminium wants to sell goods into the European Union, then at the border, that good is taxed in exactly the same way that it would have been taxed if it was produced domestically. So that's why it's called a border adjustment mechanism. Now, getting that right is quite a complicated procedure, and we've never had a CBAM anywhere in the world. The EU is pioneering this. And so actually we've had a lead-up period, which is already happening, started in 2023, and that's called the transitional period. But the real effect will be starting in 2026 with what's called the definitive period. And that's when the tax begins. So it's a very major shift for anyone involved in heavy industry, anyone involved in trade and customs for industrial manufactured goods. And it's also a big step forward, I would argue, for climate legislation.
Wow, that was a lot of information already. Maybe we can go back to a few points in there that I was trying to understand. So you said basically this new law or regulation is trying to level the playing field, and that the European companies were at a disadvantage before that. Can you explain that again? So what happened before? So in the previous years, what was the problem for European companies, and did that have any real effect also that some companies were struggling because of that?
Well, I don't think they were particularly struggling. You see, there was a sort of requirement to pay, and then an offsetting requirement that you didn't have to pay, right? That's the situation we have right now. So those are called free allowances. So you have to pay a certain number, you have to buy a certain number of allowances in order to emit carbon dioxide, but then the European Union is going to give you some of them for free. Right.
Okay. Because you are at a disadvantage otherwise with international companies.
Precisely.
Okay.
But the EU is going to now phase those free allowances out. And so what that really means is that domestic producers are going to have to pay a higher carbon price, and importers are going to have to pay a higher carbon price. In other words, we are now going to see that effect of carbon prices enter more and more of the mainstream, I suppose. And that is new. That is definitely new.
And the higher prices also shall support initiatives to, in general, a due reduction of carbon emissions at the end, I guess.
Right. I mean, from an economic point of view, it's giving a clear signal to investors in the very, very big capital decisions that steel makers, aluminium makers, cement makers need to put together. What is the process by which we're going to make steel in the future? Are we going to rely on coal-based systems, or are we going to move to more and more electric-driven systems for the production of commodity goods? And many of those systems are right now in their infancy. They are, I'd say, underinvested in. And we haven't seen those declining cost curves that you'd like to see that have happened elsewhere, where we've seen solar power has got much cheaper, wind power has got much cheaper, and these things have become much more mainstream. But we haven't seen that process in the industrial sphere. We're still burning a great deal of coal and emitting a huge amount of CO2 to make everyday goods. That can change. And the CBAM is an attempt to reorientate global markets towards making those kinds of investments in future technologies. That's why I see it as a very ambitious and potentially very exciting regulation. And it's why I've decided to devote so much time to it.
And you also mentioned that it's a new rule. It's going to start now. So you said something that although it's already being introduced, it's not really come into effect.
So there are two stages. right? And we're already well into the first stage. The first stage is called the transitional period. And in this period, a lot of companies are being asked to put together their data and send it to the European Commission. And the European Commission is coming back to them. And at the time of recording this, they're about to publish a slight revision to the rules based on what they're seeing, which will kind of tighten it on the key people they're trying to focus on and maybe loosen it on some of the people who are kept swept up in it who didn't need to be. So this transitional period is really important. It's a learning period for companies and it's a learning period for the European Commission about how CBAM can actually work in practice. And that started in the end of 2023 and it's then going on until the end of this year. January 2026, that's the date to kind of keep your eye on because that's when this period of actually paying for your imported embedded emissions begins. It will still be phased in, right? Actually, the definitive period is not a light switch. It is a dimmer switch, okay? But it will start. The lights will go on in January 2026. We will start to have to actually pay taxes. And also, I think you'll see that penalties for non-compliance are going to really pick up. They've been quite light touch penalties so far in the transitional period, although they are there if anyone, regulators want to enforce them. But they're really going to pick up in 2026 because it's a tax. Everyone has to pay a tax the same way.
Okay. And so it means in this transitional phase we're actually in, it's about gathering data. It's about setting up the reporting processes. And can you give us some more details about these reporting requirements? What does it mean exactly for EU importers?
Yeah, it's not an easy system. The way to think about why it's so complicated is to think about what you're asking importers to do. You know, you have an importer, say, in the Netherlands, buying some steel from, let's say, India. Now, they have to pay for the carbon dioxide that was emitted to make that steel. Well, you can't test the carbon dioxide by looking at the steel that's sitting there in Rotterdam. The only way to find out how much carbon dioxide was emitted and then pay a per ton fee for that is to ask the Indian producer. But maybe the Indian producer, in fact, is a distributor. Okay, so then they have to go and ask their supplier. Maybe that supplier was not an integrated production site, but was just doing the downstream processing. They are responsible for some of the emissions, but the rest of the emissions come from their supplier, the upstream mill. So each of these different entities, which might by now be in several different countries, they are all kind of required to contribute data. And that is really new. And that is really, really ambitious as well, because you're asking companies in lots of different countries to comply with Europe's rules. And we have seen that, right? We have seen, you know, willingness to take this seriously around the world, but it does require the EU to be quite diplomatic and to make clear this is not about trying to shut down trade, and it's not about trying to get data that isn't sort of required for business purposes. This is about trying to reduce supply chain carbon dioxide emissions because of the fact that we've got a climate emergency. We've got, the planet, you know, exceeding 1.5 degrees just last year. We've got a lot of serious issues that we need to deal with. And the EU is pointing to those things and saying, look, we're not doing this to make your life difficult, but it is going to be difficult. And here are the steps that you need to take to put this information together. And, you know, it is challenging. It is very challenging for a company in the EU to understand the exact process by which its suppliers and its supplier suppliers created the goods that they buy. They haven't had to do this before. And so, you know, a lot of the information that they're asking for it through the standard kind of trade compliance systems, but they are asking for completely new data points that neither they nor, you know, neither side has ever asked for this information or given this information, right? If you are in charge of procurement at a metal importing company in the EU, you know, your specialism is not sustainability. And that's also the case if you're selling those products out of Taiwan or Vietnam. You know, that's not your expertise either, typically speaking. So there's a very big learning curve.
Like you said, it sounds really difficult to get accurate information in this kind of process. Is there a way that someone checks these facts or this data? Like, how would you control it?
Yeah. So for now, no one is checking. Now, we you know, our service at CU Bamboo, we help companies with this entire process. And we care very deeply about ensuring that companies put together accurate information. We try to give them tools and systems to help them understand what they need to do. And we can build in certain auditing functions to check the quality of the data. But we can't verify it. We can't go into every mill, every manufacturing facility and find out whether their numbers are accurate. And so neither can the European Commission. So what the European Commission are requiring is that companies get their data verified. This is the supply chain companies. And the verification should be carried out by a qualified third-party verification services provider. And the Commission is, you know, putting in place detailed regulations of how that would work. So that's another burden that has to be absorbed by the system somehow. It's worth saying that right now there isn't any verification. The verification would only come in the definitive period.
That also sounds like a lot of extra work for auditing companies for a completely new field of work, I guess. I mean, like you said, when there's... If you're procurement in a company, now you have to figure out all these additional details, get an auditing company to do it, and someone has to pay for that, I guess, as well.
It is a lot of work. It is a lot of work. And I think that in the long term, this kind of work will become very normal, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We in the same way that if you are a financial firm, post the global financial crisis, you know, you have certain requirements that at first seemed entirely onerous. But if you don't comply with those requirements, then big banks in the USA, they won't do business with you. Okay, so there's been a spread of regulation. And you could even make a comparison to something more basic. You could say that it's similar to the way in which we just have accounting processes that are now deeply embedded. I think that in the future, it won't be possible for emitters, for big emitters at least, to simply release planetary warming gases into the atmosphere in an unchecked fashion. I think they will be required to, at the very least, keep a continuous audit of that data, of that practice. And that audit will have to be checked by auditors, and that this will be an intrinsic part of any responsible business's processes. It's kind of remarkable that that isn't happening already. It is happening here and there in bits and pieces, but there isn't a standardization. So the CBAM is an attempt to really create a standardization for that. And I think that it is long-lasting. I think that companies at first are going to be rather shocked by the amount of work that they've got to do. Then they're going to try it out. Then the system is going to adjust. But in the long term, I think anywhere in the world where you emit significant amounts of planetary warming gases, you're going to have to account for that. You're going to have that audited. You're going to have to pay for that auditing process to take place. So the CBAM is the start of that for many, many companies.
With these requirements coming up and with these reporting requirements, how can data management and technology help companies to navigate through these requirements? So as you mentioned the financial sector, you mentioned the accounting. So I think there are already digital solutions out there that really makes it quite smooth to fulfill the requirements of those sectors. But yeah, what about for CBAM? Do you see any chance, probably, because you've founded a startup to solve this issue? And how can technology and data management help? And exactly how do you, as CBAMBOO, support these requirements?
Sure. So we could see that, first of all, there was a compliance challenge that was new, right? And so to a certain extent, it seemed like a good idea to start a new kind of company that was totally focused on that compliance challenge, because it has elements, the CBAM, of lots of different systems, as we've been saying, environmental systems, trade systems, and taxation systems. And we needed to build a new team who could bring all that kind of different expertise together and respond precisely to the needs of the CBAM legislation in order to help companies with what they were going to need under CBAM. Now, what they would need to begin with would be compliance tools. Okay, so that's our first thing that we've built, right? That's partly because the transitional period that we talked about, that's just a compliance phase. There's no tax to be paid. So it's just about filling in those forms and getting accurate data. So we built a platform, the CBAMB platform, which is designed to help companies with through that process and to run an end-to-end system. So you can put your supply chain onto it. They are guided through the system of providing their carbon emissions. And then you can create your CBAM report and you can send that report to the European Commission. So that's the compliance toolkit that we already have built, that's live and that's available. That's not the end point, though. The goal here is to do something much broader. It's to help companies actually analyze their tax exposure under CBAM and then figure out how to optimize that. What business decisions can they make to minimize their taxes? That's all stuff that the CBAMB platform is going to support in the near future. And we're designing it so that it will be compliant with not just the EU CBAM, but the UK CBAM that's due to come in and other CBAMs that are being proposed around the world. We see them all working in a fairly similar fashion, and we're going to make sure that we expand what we do to cover all of them. So that essentially it becomes, I'd say, a carbon intelligence platform for heavy industry. Heavy industry are the companies that are most affected by CBAM. They are the companies that, essentially in our terminology, that just move a lot of physical volume of goods around the world, steel, aluminium, the auto supply chain industry, the fasteners industry, various different groups in there. Those companies need their whole way of doing business will be mediated through the EU CBAM and other CBAMs that will be introduced. And we'd like to be their kind of companion, their intelligence platform for understanding that carbon pricing environment that they'll be in.
Let's jump a little bit back again in history and in the year 2023, I think by then CBAMB was founded. Mm. How exactly did you came up with the idea? So did you just sit down in a bar with a beer and your friend and just said, hey, I heard about this new requirements coming up, and how did this happen? Or
there were a lot more, it was a lot more Zoom calls. It wasn't even as fun as a bar and a beer. I mean, I was on a program called Carbon 13, which is based in Cambridge in England. And Carbon 13 is an accelerator for people who want to build a venture that can scale and have positive climate impact. And I'd been looking for some time at lots of different business ideas that would be potentially impactful in the climate space. I met my co-founder, Daniel Sharp, and he is a data scientist, and he had become very interested in regulation and the possibility of, you know, helping people with regulation. And we did indeed review the different regulations that were coming forward at the time. And we noticed that at that particular point in time, which was, I think, March 2023, the EU CBAM was just about to be passed. It was pretty much finished its journey through the European institutions, and that it was going to come into effect at the early stages in October that year, which was quite quick. And we kind of knew that a lot of established companies would probably not have the speed to actually kind of build something for CBAM and have it up and running in time for October. And we knew that as, you know, for ourselves, we could get a minimum viable product out in that time. And, you know, by October, we already had our first customers. And what we were doing for them was very manual. It was mainly us saying, well, we'll sort this out for you. We'll find a way. We'll figure it out. There'll be software coming, but, you know, don't expect it to look very beautiful for the time being. We put out sort of early versions of that software for those pilot customers early in 2024. But we were able then to launch the platform, the CBAMB platform, in July last year. That's when the transitional phase kind of got a bit more complicated, a bit more difficult. Mm. There was a requirement from then on to get what are called actual values from the supply chain. So our timing was really good. We were pretty much the first company to try and take this regulation completely seriously. Okay, say, well, there's a whole business in this. And that's why we named the company CBAMBOO, to sort of indicate that we were just going to stick to CBAM and really just try to focus on that and be the natural solution for people dealing with CBAM. You know, we had the time to actually get up and running. We were definitely very early. We became the first CBAM-focused company to get venture capital funding. And we still feel like we have a first mover advantage, but we can't take that for granted. It's a competitive world, so we have to keep growing. Mm.
Dan, maybe you can explain in a little bit more detail, what exactly does your company offer and how does the platform work for someone who's looking to find a partner to do this data collecting with the supply chain?
So it's a software system at its heart, but we also have an extensive service operation. Mm-hmm. So you know, it depends to a certain extent on how much our customers would like us to help them through the process, you know, on a personal level, or how much they want to instead just run the system on their own, in their own way. But it's a SaaS software platform. You will go onto the site and you will put together your imports data with where we have an integration with AEB, I should just mention. You'll put together your imports data and then you will layer onto that the supplier data, the supplier emissions data. Now, to get that, you need to reach out to your supply chain. So you fill in who your suppliers are, and you send the platform sends them join requests. So they will get an email saying, you know, would you like to join the CBAMBOO platform? It's free. You can use it to put together your CBAM data. And of course, some of those companies will already be on the platform. You know, we already have plenty of companies around the world on the system. And so their data will already be there. But it's important to then point out, suppliers' data is private by default. It's up to each supplier to decide who they wish to share that data with. And if they do share that data, then there is a kind of a live link, which is much better than using any kind of a spreadsheet-based system, which is really the alternative to using software. With a spreadsheet, the supplier, let's say it was the supplier in India I mentioned earlier, might be struggling to put their data together because they're waiting for information from their own suppliers. And so they know they've got to email off information to somebody. They don't know when to hit send or whatever. And mm-hmm. What happens if after they've hit send, the information turns out to be inaccurate or something like that? You know, do they send another version? You can get into this really difficult zone of emails being chasing around the world with a great deal of pain. Now, we take away all of that pain. Every bit of the data that somebody puts onto the platform is updatable. And if it updates on your side, it updates for everybody else immediately. So it cascades through the system. And that kind of waterfall is really valuable for businesses putting this together, because it means that they can do this process much, much more quickly. At the end of the day, they see their CBAM data there. They can create what's called an XML file. That's really the European Commission's only way for information to get from our systems into their systems. One day, I hope that there will be a live link so that they can just click a button, but that isn't there yet. And it's radically quicker and easier to put together your CBAM data as a result. Now, very shortly, we will see additional systems coming onto this as the CBAM grows. So we are road testing internally our analytics platform, and optimization tools are coming shortly after that. Optimization means essentially, okay, well, analytics means, okay, I've put together my CBAM data. What does that mean for me financially? So we need to tell people, okay, here's how much tax you'll be paying in 2026, 2027, etc. Optimization is, okay, now I know how much tax I've got to pay. How can I reduce that? So that's about sort of saying, well, here are the different suppliers that you're buying from. Could you swap them? You know, could you buy the same product from a different supplier? And then over time, you know, here are other suppliers on the network who've chosen to share their carbon data. Would that be a better alternative for you? And we can build AI tools to scrape that information and try to offer people an advanced service for making those decisions. There are lots of other ways in which carbon intelligence is going to be needed for organizations like our customers. And, you know, we're trying not to get too ahead of the game. We try to offer people services that they need today. So that's what we're offering today and what we're rolling out.
What happens in this process if you send out a link to the supplier and he doesn't want to join the platform?
No one's required to join the platform. Otherwise, the whole system would fall apart. So if somebody doesn't want to join the platform, they can send information in a spreadsheet format. It's mildly less productive because they might need to make corrections and it would slow the system down. But they're, of course, welcome to do that. Or they can choose to send no information. Now, if they do that, then they may struggle to actually sell goods into the European market in the long term. But in the short term, the European Commission has created an allowance for companies to say, for European importers to say, essentially, we tried to get the data and we failed to get the data, and here is the evidence of us trying and failing to get the data. And all of that evidence can be gathered and accumulated and managed on our platform as well.
So basically, you can say, I tried, here's the proof, but I didn't get any data, and then the EU Commission would be okay with that.
That's it. Yes, exactly.
Is that also the biggest difficulty in this whole process, to get everyone to comply with and send the data?
I'd say so at the moment, yes. The biggest difficulty at the moment that companies face, that importers face, is that they cannot get data from the supply chain. And that's what we're here to help with. We make it much, much easier. But I'd say actually, in many ways, there's another difficulty which, you know, people face, which is, let's say that you are in charge of procurement or trade compliance at a mid-sized European steel importer, metals importer, and you import maybe 200,000 tons a year. Very hard to explain to your CFO that actually there's going to be a very large bill coming. You know, 200 euros a ton, let's say, of your imports, something like that. So it quickly gets into millions and tens of millions. I say 200 euros as a very, very rough rule of thumb. You know, the carbon price is at about 75, 80 euros. There'll typically be 1 to 2 tons of CO2 for every ton of imports, and the carbon price is going to rise. So just if you're just starting to think about this, then take every ton that you import, multiply that by 200 euros, you get some sense of the problem. Now, very typically, the people dealing with CBAM, they aren't actually empowered to make decisions, financial decisions, about the whole scope of the company. And if anything, you know, they'll come to their manager and say, look, I've got the CBAM problem. And someone will say, well, can you do it for free? Can you sort it out for free and make it go away for free, etc.? And they'll say, well, I've got this headache of compliance, but do you know what? There's actually a tax coming, and it's actually very, very big. The reason that this is difficult for people to manage and to understand is that CBAM doesn't really respect whether you're a large company or a small company. It's only about how much stuff you import. That's what matters.
And you just mentioned it, but where in a company, or even who in a company, is responsible for CBAM? Because, I mean, it's new. It could be procurement, could be customs, could be finance. I imagine this would be quite difficult also to set up as a new. I don't know, do you need a team for that, or can it be only one person?
Procurement, customs, finance, you could have mentioned sustainability as well. All of these teams actually need to get together and discuss CBAM. Now, I'd say it really depends on what kind of company you are. You know, if you are, with CBAM, you need to think in a completely different scale to, you need to use a different scale. What do I mean by that? I mean, normally you scale things according to revenue. But with CBAM, you need to scale things according to imported tons, which is not a number that most people have top of mind when they're thinking about their company. And I'm saying imported tons of CBAM goods. So that's steel, aluminium, cement, fertilizer. Those goods are not ones that most companies import very large volumes of at all. In fact, we expect that by the time this goes out, the Commission will have confirmed that it is limiting the, it is creating a new minimum threshold, which is going to be 100 tons of CO2, or rather in sort of more manageable terms, 50 tons of metal, of 50 tons of CBAM goods. Okay. Now, there are many, many very large companies out there that are in the manufacturing space that do not import 50 tons of CBAM goods a year, right? You know, most pharmaceutical companies or most retail companies aren't in that category. In fact, many high value add manufacturing companies will not be in that category either. You know, if you make jet engines, for example, you might possibly make components for jet engines that, you know, mean that you have a very, very high revenue, but, you know, you don't necessarily need to import more than 50 tons of material every year. So if you're in this category of companies where the tonnage is very low or not at all, then I'd say the sustainability team can look at CBAM and consider it. If it's a minor amount, let's say under a, you know, I don't know, 500 tons, something like that, then the tax is still going to be pretty small, right? 500 tons times 200 euros. It's going to be a manageable number, or even possibly a rounding error for a lot of businesses. So there, I'd say it's definitely something that the trade compliance team can handle the paperwork for, and then, you know, make adjustments, particularly once the system beds down. But once you're getting into the thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of tons, and there are companies out there, of course, that import millions of tons of goods a year, at that point, it's absolutely something for the CFO to be looking at. And the CFO should be setting up a team of people, trade compliance and procurement would be high among the list, to actually make sure that they're fully on top of this and to figure out how CBAM is going to affect everything that they do, because it affects what they buy, it affects what they pay for what they buy, it affects the contracts, it affects what they sell, what the prices they offer for what they sell. It might affect the way in which they build the products, right? It might affect the bill of materials that go into the products. So there are many, many ripple effects of CBAM for companies that are in that heavy industry category.
You mentioned before that you have the vision for CBAM Boot to become a platform supporting global compliance requirements. So at the moment, I think you're based in the UK. And at the moment, you're focusing on the EU market. So, and you mentioned already that the UK is also coming up with regulations. Will there be a different difference between the EU and UK requirements? Do you think also other countries will follow the EU with this regulation setup? Will there be similar challenges, or how do you think the whole topic will evolve and develop, and how will your platform do so?
Well, the UK, and I'm sitting here in London, the UK would never have come up with CBAM if it hadn't been for the EU doing it first. It would not have been top of the priority list. But it's not just that. It is a very unusual, one-of-a-kind thing, the CBAM. And once that is out there, other countries are going to copy the system and figure out what, you know, what are the best practices. And the European Commission's been explicit that one of the goals of CBAM is to raise climate ambitions around the world. And they very much want to encourage this process of other CBAMs, other carbon pricing systems taking shape. Someone once gave me a rather technical analogy, which is VAT. And so the value added tax is something that I think started with Belgium in the 70s and maybe the Netherlands. And it works much better when it is a system that is replicated in different countries. And that took a while. It took a while to spread, but the logic of the system was very clear. And as a result, you have VAT in many, many countries around the world. I think it will be like that with CBAM. But of course, each country is going to do its own thing in terms of exactly how they implement it. So the UK came up with a slightly different calculation for a threshold. So they've come up with a £50,000 a year threshold. That was quite distinct from the European Union's original threshold, which was 150 euros. But it's much more in line with what they've now done. The UK looked at including glass and ceramics in CBAM. It's not included in the EU. They've actually dropped that idea for now, but I expect they'll come back to it. The UK is going to be taxing both direct and indirect emissions. That's quite a technical one, but very impactful. Basically, it means that people will be paying the full carbon price for the electricity that they use. Whereas in the EU, for various reasons, a lot of the goods that are covered by CBAM, they won't have to pay for the electricity usage component of their carbon emissions. So there are these kind of, you know, it's never going to be precisely the same region by region. And I expect that there'll be some regions that come up with, you know, more difficult, confusing systems and some that come up with more streamlined systems. And, you know, for what we need to do, we need to be nimble, right? That's our job as a startup. And we need to be ready to be flexible. We need to adapt the software as the regulation changes. And part of our job is to keep people informed about what are those regulation changes and make sure that we're on top of them ourselves, which is quite a lot of work. But we enjoy it in a strange way.
It sounds very similar to, you know, also customs systems around the world. Similar, but not exactly the same in each country. I want to go back to one point you mentioned before where you said that the EU Commission brought in a minimum rule that says if you import less than a certain amount, you do not have to comply with the rules. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
What is your view? Is that kind of going against the overall goal of saving carbon if you know, have these companies that, I mean, they contribute a smaller amount, but they still contribute to the problem. So they just get for free then? What do you think?
No, I think I'm pretty much supportive of what they're doing here. You know, you need to just sort of think of it in terms of like a scale that drops away very quickly, right? Mm-hmm. A logarithmic distribution. Or is that right? An exponential distribution. I am never quite sure. There are many, many companies that import, you know, tiny amounts of goods. And if you were to add up all of that, those emissions, it's really barely relevant compared with the big emitters, right?
Okay.
What we need to do is get the companies that are producing millions of tons of industrial goods every year and get them to invest in new technologies that don't emit carbon dioxide. And we're not going to get there if we tie up in knots lots of companies for whom, you know, when you actually look at it and actually figure it out, their emissions are very small.
Okay.
You know, if you are importing 50 tons, again, my rule of thumb, 200 euros. So you're not going to pay more than 10,000 euros, you know, and it's a lot of work. It's a lot of compliance work to get that right. So you could end up paying sort of 10,000 euros to figure out that you then have a 10,000 euro bill. And is that going to change your behavior very much? Are you really going to say, well, I'm going to invest a lot of time and effort in reconfiguring my supply chain so that I drive down that 10,000 euros to 8,000 euros or 5,000 euros. I mean, maybe in the future, in some sort of highly automated future that I can't quite see yet, we'll be able to make this process so smooth that we can actually lower that threshold and for it to be worthwhile for companies to be making those decisions. But I don't think we're there yet. And I think that this is a reasonable balance. The the vast proportion of emissions will still be covered by this system.
Okay.
And do you expect any effect on the end product prices when the big companies or the big importers have to pay those taxes? Do you think this will pass on to the consumers or to the following companies in the supply chain? Or what's your impression on that?
Well, I mean, We have very competitive markets for these kinds of commodity goods, so there is not there is not much capacity for it to go anywhere other than the end consumer in the short term. Okay, but it will be very distributed through the system. But very quickly, I believe companies will have to reconfigure what they're doing, how they're making the products. You know, already all of the investment in steel is going into electric arc furnaces rather than blast oxygen furnaces, for example. The big decisions, though, are we going to shut down our blast oxygen furnaces and swap them out? Are we going to invest in hydrogen driven systems for production of steel? Those kind of investment decisions are still being taken. They're being taken all the time. And the CBAM is going to point those decisions in the right way, in my view. And I don't expect that the everyday consumer will see a difference in price. But I do expect that companies in this space will really rethink their capital expenditure. And that's so important.
Sounds, fingers crossed that this happens.
And let's see. It's an entirely new system. And I mean, I'm optimistic about this because I do think that as a planet, we are going to have to price carbon. We don't have an option not to. Pricing carbon is the best system for reducing carbon emissions. So CBAM is part and parcel of that future.
And if I'm now a company, considering that I have to probably find a solution for my CBAM reports, there are multiple options that I can choose from. I mean, there are software-based solutions. Is there any way to do it without a software?
I think it would be... I think most companies are currently doing this by hand, if you like, right?
Okay.
If you know, what we're competing with is Excel and email, right?
Okay.
When we talk to companies, we explain what we do. They say, oh, that would make our life easier. If they don't go ahead with a sale, they tend to tell us that the reason is that they think that they can do it themselves for now. Okay.
Okay.
I think that they are taking up a lot of time doing that. I think that the compliance burden will become increasingly severe once we have to have verification and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still in conversation with all of these companies. But also, you know, we need to get into a situation in the future where there is not just a time saving, but also, you know, a financial benefit for companies in using CBAMBOO. And that will happen when companies are paying a live tax and we're able to show that with our systems, you can reduce that tax burden. So, it is a gradual process of companies getting used to the idea that this is something that they need to invest in. And us also, you know, iterating on product, you know, constantly. I mean, the platform is miles better than it was a year ago, and 2 years ago it didn't exist. So we need to build value as well.
Now you get a chance to give us a little bit of advertisement for your company, because, I mean, there are different software providers for CBAM reporting out there. So what is the reason company should choose you? Or also, you can also say maybe which companies fit to your platform. Maybe not every company could fit.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly are focused from the beginning on the companies that we believe will be most affected by mm-hmm. CBAM. Okay, so for us, it's companies very typically in the steel industry, the aluminium industry, the auto supply chain, the fastener industry, where we will be at Fastener Fair Stuttgart in March. It's a big trade fair. We are going to be exhibiting at UK Metals Expo in September as well. So that gives you a sense of the sorts of market areas that we particularly focus on. We also have been working with a number of very large companies that are not in those sectors, but that require, you know, compliance to be kind of on point for everything that they do. We feel like we are, you know, offering some level of thought leadership in this space. We feel like we are on top of the detail of CBAM as it progresses, and we are not going to deviate from that path, right? There are some companies that are offering CBAM services as a sort of toe in the water, as an attempt to hold on to clients who maybe they offer six or seven different things to, and the client says, do you also do CBAM? For us, we're looking to work with the companies who understand that CBAM is going to be a big challenge for them, a central challenge for their business, that they are going to have to pay substantial amounts, and they're going to have to really think about how they integrate that into their systems. And we want to be their partner for that.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your point about competition, I don't necessarily see a lot of companies out there that are trying to do that, that are this focused on CBAM, that are this much on top of the detail, that have as advanced a platform as we do for this process. I think it's quite an unusual combination. And, you know, you need a company that will not just send you, give you a say to you, okay, I'll look after you, the client, for your supply chain. Just give them this spreadsheet to fill in, right? That's the other thing that we, I think, are very good at, that a lot of companies fall down on. We've invested a great deal of time in creating a product for the supply chain itself, a side of the product, mm-hmm. that is very user-friendly, that is visual and intuitive, that doesn't involve a lot of spreadsheets. And by the way, that side of the platform, it's completely free to sign up. Okay, so any supplier around the world, to European markets, or anyone in a supply chain that ultimately leads to European markets, should consider going to cbamboo.com and setting up a free account. And they can use that to put together their emissions data in a fully CBAM compliant way. And that will, I think, be a big advantage for those companies. But it also does advantage us to have those companies on our platform and to be already there with that really widely established network.
Yeah, sounds logical. Thanks. And you're the CEO of CBamboo, and so what's your main task and what's your responsibilities? I mean, I follow your LinkedIn and I see you mentioned you have to inform also the market about developments regarding CBAM and carbon border regulation. So what does your day-to-day work? Do you have any day-to-day work, or what does it look like? And what's your responsibility in your role?
I mean, despite the composed exterior, I have a slightly chaotic personality. So my day-to-day involves a lot of chasing after emails that I should have replied to 2 weeks ago, and just asking my team what they're up to, and then saying, okay, I shouldn't actually be asking you what you're doing. Just do it. I'm sure you've got it absolutely fine. And just trying not to be a blocker in that way. I mean, anyone who's started a startup knows just this is the most fun job you can have. It is wonderful. But you are always, always behind. And you are gradually get the privilege of passing off bits of your job to other people as you're able to take on more people as you grow. I'm the CEO. I'm essentially in charge of the team, in charge of marketing, in charge of finance, in charge of getting investment. I do quite a lot of operations. I suppose the most important thing I do day to day, though, is sales. And, you know, it is very, very important for companies who come to us to speak to our sales team, who are excellent, but also to get the chance to speak to me. And to know that, you know, at this early stage in our development, what they say goes straight to me at the top and to my business partner, that it cascades down through the whole team, which is not a large team, that we are very much aligned with the needs and requirements of our early stage customers. And, you know, we'll carry those. If we get to become big, I hope we'll still be able to carry that approach forward, because, you know, if you are customer obsessed, then you will always have a place in the market.
And it feels like you're really obsessed or really deep in the topic, and you're really close to the market and close to the requirements and close to your customers. So sounds like a good fit.
I think obsessed is a good word to describe how you're feeling about CBAM.
It's something that I've decided to devote the past couple of years of my life to, and I hope to be working on it for a very long time. So I am very focused on it, but I'm just excited about it. I'm excited because it is something, I work in the climate space, and the past couple of months have not been the most optimistic. Let's put it like that. But CBAM does give me optimism, because although it is a technical sounding system, and it's not a it's not particularly sexy sounding name or whatever, but it is an attempt to make polluters pay, right? And I believe in that principle very deeply. And I think that principle opens up the possibility of getting, you know, one day beyond this situation of continuous rising temperatures, rising sea levels, and rising natural disasters. You know, I may not be around to see it, but I hope that my children, my grandchildren will be able to inherit that world. And I think that if you can price carbon, you are onto you're holding onto a bit of the solution. So I would say it's something I want to see succeed. And all of us at CBamboo, we're trying to we're trying to help our customers succeed in the CBAM space. I suppose at the same time, we're also trying to make CBAM itself succeed.
Hmm. And it sounds like you are very optimistic with that it is fulfilling what it's supposed to do. On the other hand, are there any loopholes or weaknesses where you think the current system or the current framework is maybe not doing what it's supposed to do and needs to be amended for the future?
There are plenty of issues that are raised, and you can absolutely call them loopholes. So there are issues around the definition of scrap metal, right? Scrap metal, which is essentially supposed to be recycled or used metal, which is very, very prevalent in, for example, the aluminium industry, which is almost entirely scrap, right? It's amazing how much it gets recycled. But, you know, you can actually have some material which has just gone through a factory and you just sort of cast it off and then you say, well, that's scrap, but it hasn't ever been used. So how do we treat that, right? That currently is a loophole that, you know, should be addressed. There's no rebate for exports. So some companies think that this is a big problem. There's a range of views on this, but CBAM currently doesn't have any kind of export offset. So exporters from the EU argue that they are put at a disadvantage, and that's something that you might see addressed. The CBAM covers, you know, doesn't cover downstream goods after a certain point. The scope could arguably expand. There are many, many ways in which it is imperfect. But what we have now is like this massive loophole, right? What we have now is a situation where, you know, if you want to set up a steel making or aluminium making or whatever factory somewhere in the world, then you're entitled to put as much CO2 into the atmosphere as you can get, as you can physically can achieve. Okay. That to me is the loophole. And so this is correcting that. But it will definitely need further amendment and refinement. I'm confident that this is not the final version.
Okay. This is a good statement regarding an outlook for CBAM. Do you see any major changes coming up or future developments which our listeners should prepare for? Is there already something at the horizon to see or that comes up?
So just while we're recording this, we've just had the first sort of leaks of what's the next bit of legislation on CBAM, which, as I say, by the time this comes out, I think it will be public, fully public. And I don't know whether this is the final version, but people should be keeping an eye on the legislative developments that are going on at the moment, because in the run-up to the start of that definitive period, there is going to be a lot coming out from the European Commission. It seems like, for example, there won't be a requirement to pay each quarter in year one. It will be a payment at the end of year one, for example. And that's obviously very significant from a cash flow perspective. Again, you've got this de minimis rule. We need to make sure that that goes ahead. It looks like there will be stiffer penalties for deliberate non-compliance than we first thought. That's something that people might want to be aware of, making the decision on whether to try to get compliant. I expect that there will be a lot of detail on verification. There will be more to come on expansion of the scope of CBAM. We have a free monthly newsletter, which you can go to news.cbamboo.com and sign up. We will be keeping everyone very well informed of all these developments.
Yeah, and it's definitely worth to follow you on LinkedIn because I think you're really doing a great job on keeping us up to date regarding CBAM.
Well, thank you very much. To conclude our session, we always have also one question that might be to give you a personal view on. If you had one wish for the future in terms of global trade management or CBAM or anything else, what would you wish for?
Well, I'd like to see this system adopted in every country. I'd like to see every country having a carbon price. And a CBAM is part and parcel of having multiple different carbon prices in different countries. I accept that that would be a complicated trading environment, but I think that it would massively incentivize companies to rethink what they're doing and to drive emissions down.
That sounds like a really optimistic vision. I guess we will be watching out for it, and maybe we can talk again in a little while and see if it came true.
Yes, that would be lovely.
We cross our fingers for it, and that's a good outlook, hopefully. And we stay optimistic about it. And I think it's a good thing to end this episode. So thank you very much, Gabriel, for being our guest today. And it was really a pleasure. And it was really great to get so much insights about CBAM, about CBAMBOO, about how IT and digital solutions can companies help with the challenges they're facing at the moment with Excel spreadsheets. And so, thanks a lot for being our guest.
Thank you.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it enormously.
And to everyone who listened to this episode, as usual, let us know your feedback, subscribe to our podcast. And if you have any ideas out there for new topics, or even you want to come onto the show and be our guest, please contact us at podcast@iba.com.
Yeah. So thanks a lot. And
thank you.
Have a great day. See you.
Das war Freier Verkehr, der AEB Podcast von und für die AlltagsheldInnen des Global Trade Managements. Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.